From Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino. And the Music Row Show.
Sorry, I good old was lost in
Buddy Hyatt on piano there.
Buddy Hyatt. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Bros Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers and aspiring bluegrass artists who just want to figure out how things work here in good old Music City.
That's right. Remember, we don't know a darn thing.
Nah.
We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you, but we are able to find brilliant, talented people, bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and answer your questions.
Yeah, and you can do that by going to Facebook, facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. Like us, please, and then you can chime in with your questions and comments right now. You can also find us on Twitter at TheMusicRowShow.
Really?
Yes.
We tweet?
Well, you know, every once in a while.
All right. Good to know. So what about after the show?
After the show, Instagram.
Really?
Definitely want to see all those great pictures of Scott, close-ups where he lays down on the couch after
Easy.
The show.
There's young people in the audience
and
right
eats
now.
Ribs is what I was going to say. But
that's even grosser.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeez.
Anyway, we got a great show tonight, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We got bluegrass legend and Hall of Famer Bobby Osborne here in the first hour.
Yep, and then hit songwriter and old friend of the show, Chris Wallen's going to be here in hour two to talk about some boat trip he's going on.
Yay, looking forward to that. Yeah. All right, why don't we get to it, Scott? Do the honors.
I'm going to. You know, sometimes, you know, we've been doing this show for 10 years now, and it's always an honor to, A, be on this microphone and be in this studio. But sometimes this show is just a little more special to be a part of, and this is one of those times. After 67 years in the music biz, countless IBMA, CMA, Hall of Fame awards, you kind of, if you listen to this new CD, you get the feeling that Bobby's kind of just getting his second wind. This latest project is titled Original. It was just released by Compass Records to rave reviews. It is a fantastic CD. He just had a blistering set at Bonnaroo that people are still talking about. You can still hear him regularly peel the paint off the Grand Ole Opry walls, singing hits like Ruby and, of course, you know, his big signature hit, Rocky Top. We have so much to talk about. This is a profound honor, and it's a pleasure to say, Grand Ole Opry star Bobby Osborne, we're so happy you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. Thank you. Thank you.
And we ran out of time, but it was great having you here. Sorry, I don't know.
Well, on behalf of the Painters Union at the Grand Ole Opry House, they would like you to stop peeling the paint off every week because, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, if I didn't, I'd be surprised.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. So you figured out what you wanted to do pretty darn early in life, didn't you? Well, how did you come about that decision and you know, what was it that made you decide that music was it for you?
Well, back where I came from, there wasn't anything to do but on Saturday night but listen to the Grand Ole Opry. And I got to, when I was probably 7, 8, 9 years old, where I'm from, why there was no electricity, no inside bathrooms or
wow,
everything, you know, we didn't realize how tough it was until I got to where there was water, running water and everything.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. You didn't know what you were missing.
If you don't know,
The only thing we had was the Grand Ole Opry to listen to. And it was just a thing that every Saturday night, you just, that's all there was to do. Because when it got with no electricity, so when it got dark, you had to find a spot and sit there and listen to the Grand Ole Opry or get in a bed, willing to.
Well, how'd you listen to the Grand Ole Opry then?
That battery operated, right?
Oh, you had a battery. My dad had one of them big Motorola radios just sit on the floor and run by battery. And you had to keep batteries for it. But anyway, I got acquainted with music, and of course, my dad in growing up, he was a Jimmy Rogers fan. And of course, in those days, Jimmy Rogers was the king of it all.
Right.
So he learned to play the guitar, and nobody else in his family got interested in Jimmy Rogers or music besides him, and. In and trying to sing like Jimmy Rogers, why, and play the guitar like that, why, he showed me three chords when I was about 10 years old. He showed me three chords on the guitar, and I got interested in it. And, of course, we'd listen to the Grand Ole Opry, and I listened to Opry one night, and I heard Ernest Tubbs singing, and my voice was kind of low-pitched then. You know, it was just like a, you know, a young kid.
That's kind of hard.
You had
to imagine.
A reverse.
You can't talk no way, you know. But anyway.
Reverse puberty?
You had reverse puberty.
But I don't know. I just, I got to listen to Ernest Tubbs, and I liked the songs, and I liked his singing, so, and I could sing those songs. So I learned how to sing, and it took me forever to learn how to sing and play the guitar all at the same time, you know. So, but once I learned how to do that, I got to singing his songs, and I did that for, I really got interested in Ernest Tubbs, and when he come on Saturday night, I come on right with him. I mean, I'm just eat up alive with Ernest Tubbs, you know.
Right.
But there's a lot of other people at the opera at that time, Eddie Arnold and some of those. And, I was listening one Saturday night, and he says, the Texas Troubadours and myself is going to be in Dayton, Ohio. My dad had moved away from Kentucky up to Ohio to find work. So we lived there then. And that's when I first saw electricity, electric lights burning and stuff like that. But I was about 10, 11 years old. And I heard Ernest Tubbs say he was going to be at the Memorial Hall in Dayton, Ohio the next day. And I told my dad, I said, you got to take me down there. I want to see the guy. So we sat about 10 rows back. And I don't know, as I watched him, the outfits he wore and just actions on the stage, his MC work, I don't know. I thought to myself, that's what I want to do right there. And I said that to myself, never had any idea that I was ever going to do that, good enough to do anything like that. But it just kept on going and going, and I kept listening to Ernest Tubbs and learning his songs, and I finally got to where I could do the both of them together,
at
sing
the
and play
time,
together. So
right.
I really got interested in it, and of course, my mom had to run me off to go to school every morning. I was so tied up with that. But anyway, make a long story short, I kept listening to the, after I saw Ernest Tubbs in person, I really got interested in it then. And I was listening to the radio one night, and I didn't know nothing about bluegrass or the instruments they played or not one single thing. I was just wrapped up with Ernest Tubbs' music, you know. But I was listening to the Opry one night, and I heard the strangest sound coming through there. Just a whole bunch of notes coming through on an instrument. I didn't know what it was. I asked my dad, I said, what is that? And I thought I had it on the wrong station because I didn't hear Ernest Tubbs singing.
What is
on
this,
it,
punk you know? Rock? What are we listening to?
He said, that's a banjo. And I said, I don't know anything about a banjo. He says, well, it's a different instrument from a guitar. But I listen, and I never, there's so much static and stuff on the radio, but that part did come on. And I listened, and boy, I really got hung up on that right there. I wanted to see how I couldn't believe it. One guy could do that many notes at one time on an instrument. So I kept listening to the opera and listening, and about 5 or 6 weeks later, I heard that same sound. Come to find out, it was Earl Scruggs playing with Bill Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And I got tied into bluegrass. And about that time, I was about 15 or 16, my voice changed. It went high. And so
that's the funniest darn thing I've ever
cut me
heard.
Out of her stub right there. But I mean, so, but I got to singing, I got tied into Bill Monroe's songs. So I got to singing them then. Just one thing led to another. And of course, before I noted, I knew it. I mean, I was trying to play bluegrass and country music too. So, and as the years went by, I was so wrapped up with wanting to do that like the rest of them.
Yeah.
I never gave up. And so like I said, my mom had to run me off to get to school every morning. I finally finished the 10th grade, and I thought, boy, I ain't got time for this no more. So I left school and went into that just full blast. And so, and I ain't done, I've had to quit 2 or 3 times and get me a job somewhere. But I've done everything from bus driving to...
You were a cabbie, weren't you?
I drove a cab one time. That's the best job I ever had, I thought.
Yeah?
I liked that job better. And I drove a school bus for a while and worked. And my dad got me a job where he worked, and I worked there for a while. But I still had to go with the singing and playing.
There you go.
Wow. So my brother came along. I had to go in the Marine Corps about when I was almost 20 years old. And my brother, he got interested in the banjo by listening to Earl Scruggs. And when I got back out of the Marine Corps, well, he had learned how to play. So I thought to myself, boy, me and him would just go together. And I was about 22 when I got out of the Marine Corps. So we started together and we worked 50 years together.
That's amazing. By the way, I just want to say you actually fought in Korea and are Purple Heart recipient, and I want to thank you for that. And that's a
well, it's one of those things, you know. And when I think everybody dreads to go into the military because you hear so much about it being rough and all that on you. So I wanted to play and sing. I just didn't I didn't mad at nobody over there, you know. But but when your country calls you to serve, well, it's you have to drop everything and go. And that's the way I felt about it. And so, and funny story about that. My mom had five brothers that was in the Army,
mm-hmm.
and they all served in the Second World War. And they found out that I was in that draft age, and they told me, says, whatever you do, don't get in the Marine Corps, because that's a rough outfit. You don't. But they learned that by being in the Army, you know, how
right.
the Marines and the Army, you know, was together. So anyway, and my dad, the morning I went down to be sworn in, after I got my call and everything, the last words my dad told me, says, and we lived in Dayton and we had to go to Cincinnati to do that. So mm-hmm. he says, don't, whatever you do, don't get in the Marine Corps. Do like your uncle's told you now. Don't do that. He said, that's too rough. Well, I go down there and this guy told us, he said, well, he said, some of you's going to have to go into the Marine Corps because the Army's getting overloaded with men and they're not, you're going to have, some of you's going to have to go in the Marine Corps. So I was just going to stay with the Army, you know. So, and this man, he said, well, I'll tell you what. He says, you can go into the Marine Corps, or you can go into the Army, and you'll be sent to Fort Meade, Maryland. It was in the wintertime then. He says, you're up there and freeze to death. He said, or you can go into the Marine Corps, and you go out to good old sunny California, and of course, really nice. I thought, boy, that's for me right there. So I chose the Marine Corps. I got home my dad. I thought he was going to shoot me for doing that. So. But I was called on to serve my country, and I did that. And I did go to Korea. I spent a term of duty in Korea. And I was in a few battles while I was there, but I made it back home. I'm proud that I did that.
Well, we're proud of you.
Thank you.
And better off the fact that you came back, too. We need to take a quick break. This segment is brought to you by Uber.
Yeah.
Since
what?
Well, that's the one thing he hasn't done yet. He did buses, and he hasn't done an Uber driver.
Okay.
So No, it's not done by. It's not brought to you by Uber. It's brought to you by our friend Barbara Potter.
Oh, yeah.
With Barbara Potter Photography. If you're a musician and you need album covers, you need headshots, you need stuff for your website.
You need pictures.
And she is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, well, even if you're not a musician, she does weddings and, you know,
graduation pictures,
graduation things, and she's willing to travel. I don't even want to talk about the boudoir shots that you guys did. Don't even want to know about those.
Yeah.
But she does that too, if you're interested.
But ribs were involved again, actually.
Ribs and a couch were involved. Yeah, but she's awesome. Barbara Potter Photography is her website. Barbara PotterPhotography.com. And you go look at her work. She's awesome. She's reasonable, and you're going to love it.
Yep. Check her out. We're going to be back with more of Bobby Osborne. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
to the plants of Detroit for the promise of a $5 day. They would come by in December while the folks were alive.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Opry star and Hall of Famer Bobby Osborne, and that's a song off of his new album called Original. That's Kentucky Morning.
This is such a good CD.
It really is.
That is so great. Well, let's walk us through that. I know we were just talking about back when you were getting started, but we're going to yo-yo around if that's okay. And let's talk about...
Fast forward.
I'm used to that. That's
yeah. Okay. Getting together with Compass Records, you had actually been trying with, talking to a few other labels. What was it about Compass that seemed to work for you? And just talk about putting this album together. What was the mindset?
Well, I went about 5 years and didn't record any, so I thought maybe I was over the hill and didn't, wasn't that good no more. People, it's just, Allison Brown had, she was recording a gentleman by the name of Pete Rowan.
Yeah.
And he was a guitar player for Bill Monroe. Well, we was at a festival out in Telluride, Colorado, and Pete came. I knew him from working with Monroe, and he came up to me and he said, "Would you sing on my album?" I said, "Well, yeah, I would." So time went on, and finally one day he was trying to work with Allison then to get a contract with Compass Records, and so I told him I would. So finally, that time come when I went down there to the studio and sing on Pete's CD. And I got to thinking, I hadn't recorded in for a while. I got to think, well, maybe I should speak to Allison. Maybe she might do a project on me. So I asked her, and she says, well, let me think about it. So she thought about it for maybe a year or something like that. And so one day I had seen Allison. I'd seen her and just barely met her at Telluride, Colorado out there. But I never had really gotten acquainted with her or anything like that. So she decided that she would do a CD on me. And so I guess she liked what I did with Pete, singing. And it just, we got together and started picking songs out, and she'd suggest a few songs. I had some that I thought I could do. And I picked out some songs of Don Gibson, Merle Haggard, George Jones that I had never tried to sing, but I thought I could, and still think I can, but as far as that goes. But we met, and she had some songs picked out, but I think I learned so much about her as a producer. She's just number one in my books right now.
Really?
She's just great at it. She knew exactly the type of songs that I could sing and that would fit me. And so I just thought to myself, well,
you're going to trust her.
Just turn everything over to her. And so she picked the songs, and she said, if you find one that you can't be comfortable with, just say so. And so, but practically everyone that she came with, she let me do with my own band. And I've got the best band right now that I've ever had.
Really?
So I thought I'd use that band on all of them, but she had other ideas about it. She says, I'll allow you to do two tracks, and we do eight, and like I want to do them. So I was just really glad to get to record. So that's how it turned out. And, she picked out eight songs, and this Kentucky Morning, Daryl Scott had given her a promo of it, and I took it home and listened to it, and that's the story of my life right there. That's exactly. He's from Kentucky.
Right.
And he realized how it was back in those early days when I was a boy of 10 years old. I mean, anywhere you went, the only way you could get there is ride a mule or walk.
Right.
So, but it was tough going back then. But that's a great song. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, man, and I really thanked her for giving me the first chance to do that song right there, because it just fit me so well.
I bet Daryl's thrilled, too.
I've never met him in person, personally, but I will some of these times, because that's a great song. He's written some great songs.
Oh, yeah, so, a lot of them.
But anyway, it's just the way that the contract came about with Allison. And, of course, Gary, her husband, he took care of the photo of its own album, and then she's just got a great thing going with
it. It's a well-oiled machine.
It sure is, and her and her whole group of people over there that work for her is just absolutely tops and just number one.
Oh, that's great.
That is awesome. Well, one of my favorite tracks on this album is you do a take on the Bee Gees classic "Gotta Get a Message to You."
Yeah,
that is great.
I was picking out some songs, and I'd run a couple of songs. The Bee Gees, I never could understand the music they played, because I didn't play that kind of music
anymore. Right.
But their harmony is what it's what I was always interested in. Anything that I do, I'm looking for the other two parts to go with it. You know?
Right. Yeah.
But the harmony is what. And I had a couple of songs, and she says, "Well, I like Gotta Get a Message to You. I like it better than I do the other two you had." I says, "That's good. We'll just do that then." So, wow. But boy, it turned out. And this video that she made, that he had made.
It's a good-looking video. Yeah.
I was scared to death to do that thing. I'd seen that video before, and I said, man, I don't think I'd want to, I don't believe I couldn't do that.
You did it.
And
you
so
did it.
Yeah.
She said, "We're going to do a video of you." And I didn't know how to dress, or she told me, she told me the suit she wanted me to wear and everything. It's the same one I got on the picture. She said, "Wear that suit." And I had no idea. I go over there I just watched everybody else and did what they did. But it turned out really good. It sure did.
Oh, that's great. Why don't we play a song from the CD? This is what they're putting out as a single, which is a song for one of my favorite movies, Paint Your Wagon, with Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin. And the song's called "They Call the Wind Mariah."
Mm-hmm. First, the only people I don't know anything about who put it out first, but the only ones I ever heard sing it was Jim Ed Brown and his sisters.
Okay,
and they used to sing it, and other people's done it, but they was at the opera, and I've got to listen to it. But Vermeer, that was one of the ones that I really had planned on wanting to do. Bobby Jr. has helped me pick out some songs too. And We had that one on the burner.
Oh, that's great. Right.
But Allison really liked that one also.
All right, well, let's hear it right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Way out here they've got a name for wind and rain and fire. The rain is Tess, the fire. And they call the wind Mariah. Mariah blows the stars around, sends the clouds a-flying. Mariah makes the mountains sound like folks were up there dying. Far behind me. Now I'm so lost, so doggone lost, not even God can find me. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. That note at the end just made me happy. I tell you what.
Well, we were talking earlier today, you know, your voice is still just so amazing. And, you know, so many artists have a window of time and then they start losing some of their the quality and the tone and stuff. But, man, you just sound amazing.
I've noticed that in a lot of people, you know, not only country people, but people like Frank Sinatra. Like that. I've noticed that, but yeah, I don't know. I've took care of my voice.
Do you have some sort of regimen, or what do you do?
No, I never make it do what it don't want to do. If my voice don't want to, if there's some days that it don't feel like doing what I want to do, then I don't do it that day. I take care of it, and I just don't ever abuse my voice in any way. That because it's the only one I've got, and the only one I'll ever have. So I thought better take care of it while I can. So I've done that, and I'm very thankful. It's not as good, not quite as good as it was when I was 25 or 30 years old.
Yeah, it sounds.
It's good enough for me to get by with.
That's so awesome.
So Bobby Jr., he never yelled at you as a kid because he didn't want to hurt his voice?
He's got that blank stare over there.
Bobby Jr., you're in trouble. Get over here right now. You're in for it, mister.
You know, I found it very interesting that in the beginning, bluegrass really wasn't its own thing. It was just kind of lumped in with country. When and how did that change, and when did it blossom into its own genre of bluegrass?
Well, when country music started, it was not amplified, you know.
Right.
And bluegrass is the instruments that you play, you amplify them, and they don't sound as good as pickups on a guitar and steel guitars and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it just happened that way. That, and another thing, at festivals, when the bluegrass festival started, some guy would have a mandolin and at home, or a guitar or a fiddle or a banjo or anything. He can put them in the trunk of the car and he can go to that bluegrass festival and he can sit under his tent. And he can play. He don't have to have an amplifier, electricity, or nothing. He can sit there. But now, country, you can't do that with country instruments like that, because the guitars they make, I mean, they're electric guitars. Yeah. Without amplification, you don't get any tone out of them.
Yeah, pretty quiet.
That's
one
thing that's different from bluegrass.
Right.
And keeping it. Now, nowadays, my brother and me, We were playing. There was a promoter named Carlton Haney. He booked Grand Ole Opry shows all the time, and he'd run about 30 of them a year in the biggest cities, coliseums, and places like that. My brother and me, we couldn't afford but just one other guy with us to sing, because that harmony is what we worked on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked shows with Merle Haggard when he was number one, George Jones, Loretta Lynn, Johnny Cash, all of them. We worked shows, every one of them. But here sits 15,000 people out there, and just three of us on the stage with no amplification at all. You could hear them mumbling and telling jokes and everything else out there while we was on, you know.
Yeah.
So we got the idea that we had to be as loud as the rest of them. So we went to, we were playing in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and there was a little music store right across the street in this club, and these guys had these high amps, as high as real loud, huge amps, and all us, we had, by that time, we could afford another guy, so we had four of us, and we had an electric bass. So we went across the street, and everybody bought a pickup and put on, mm-hmm. We went back and put them pickups on, plugged them into that amps that night, and I'll tell you, them people in that nightclub,
and they heard you.
I turned that man up and peeled the paint right off the wall.
So, that's where it started, that whole paint peeling thing.
It helped start it. And so we found out they could hear us. So when them big coliseums come along, we were just as loud as the rest of them. I found out if people, regardless of what state you was in, bluegrass states was North Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, and West Virginia, you know, And you go out west, they don't hear bluegrass because it's country music and western swing out through there. Mm-hmm. But we played with Merle Haggard for 2 years. We worked shows with him. And everywhere we went, we just peeled the paint right off the wall.
Well, and you snuck a cord onto the Opry, didn't you? You snuck a cord onto the Opry with the pickup in your...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did that. I'll tell you a funny story about that right quick. I don't want to take up a long time. But, and of course, Bill Monroe, he didn't want anything to do with electricity.
Right.
He calls it that electric stuff, you know. But I told him one time, I said, Bill, I said, you ever realize if you're standing in front of 5,000 people without electricity, all them people can't hear you because you can't sing that loud without mm-hmm. a microphone. And I said, that microphone you're singing over, I said, it's hooked up to electricity. It makes that work. And he said, oh, that electric stuff, I don't like that at all.
That's a great Bill Monroe.
Well, I'm not the only one trying that right there. But anyway, he just didn't care for electrified instruments. But we chose to do that. Well, one night we was at the Opry. It was on his show.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced us. And I'd worked it out with the engineer upstairs at the Ryman Auditorium. And Hank Snow had a little thing out there with his guitar. He could plug it in right at the microphone. So the guy told me, he said, I can fix that up for you. And he hooked me a little female jack out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I put me one of them little stretchy cords on a mantle with a pickup. And you put that thing in your pocket, and it just folds up, you know. He told me, he says, just plug it in right there and turn your volume up as loud as it'll go. And he said, I'll take care of it from there. Monroe introduced us. We did Fireball Mail. I'll never will forget that. And boy, when I took a break on that rhyme, I just peeled the paint right off the wall of that mail. You know, we got off the. He couldn't say nothing until he was emceeing the show. He couldn't say nothing until the last, but very minute he got off. Bobby said, what kind of a mandolin you got? I said, it's just like, no, sir, it's not like the one I've got. Mine won't do that. But I never did tell him that I had a cord hooked up.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, listen, we need to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Hall of Famer Bobby Monroe.
Bobby Osborne.
What did I? You were talking about Bill Monroe, and I had Monroe on the brain. Bobby Osborne here on the Music Road Show.
The preacher talked with me and he smiled. Said, come to walk with me, come and walk one more mile. Now, for once in your life, you're alone. But you ain't got a dime, there's no time for the phone. I just gotta get a message to you. Hold on, hold on. One more hour and my life will be through. Hold on, hold on.
Man, I love that. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Bobby Osborne off of his new album called Original. And that's his take on a great Bee Gees tune called Gotta Get a Message to You.
I thought you were going to say Barry Osborne.
Barry Gibb.
No. Hey. You know, we touched on this in the intro, but you played Bonnaroo this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no big deal.
You're just so cool. It's like, yeah, you know, whatevs. And you perform with our friend Lily Mae. She's been a friend of the show since year one, when she was just a little teenager. Who else are you? First, I got to know what that was like, and then who else are you seeing out there, youth wise, that you think is going to be carrying that bluegrass torch for the next generation?
The younger generation that's coming on now, people that's probably 15 years old,
mm-hmm.
and maybe 20 or something like that, is, I guess, they get more interested in the acoustic music, maybe, or something.
And you're hearing some good stuff out there from the young ones?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, that's great. There's,
and, of course, when I came along, the bluegrass music consisted of Bill Monroe and Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs, Stanley Brothers, Reno and Smiley, Jim and Jesse, and Osborne Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so But and that went, of course, when Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs left Monroe after about 1948 and went on their own, so they put a new sound with bluegrass. And that went on for, it's and still yet, their music, I came along in those days right there. I really feel like that I came along in the traditional days of traditional country music and bluegrass. But in the 60s, maybe, well, my brother and me, we came here in 1964, mm-hmm. and it didn't take us very long to like the electric, hooking ours up, electrify them, you know.
Right.
And so we found out then that it was just a way of doing your own thing and make it work,
make
you know.
Make it work.
And through the Wilburn Brothers, we had a really good shot at it. So, but I think that the younger generation people is coming along, and they're playing, a lot of them's playing what I think is probably close to rock music on bluegrass instruments.
Right.
Fleck is a pretty good example of that there. And he's doing great at it. He's a great player. So it's eventually, I think the two of them's going to fit together pretty good, you know.
So how was Bonnaroo compared to your typical audience?
Man, I'd heard about Bonnaroo, you know, and when they told me I was going to play that, I said, oh, no. I'd seen some of them type of people.
You're going to have to practice your stage dives.
I really dreaded to, just dreaded to go down there, you know, but... there wasn't no way out of it. And you know, when I got there, they had a little trailer for me to just lounge around in, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, I stayed hid in that trailer all day. You know? But some nice people, but they just all had a good time. I mean,
there were some funny smells in the air, wasn't there?
Oh, goodness. If you know anything about smells, you know exactly what that was, you know. So, but that it, I enjoyed it. After, and the crowd that we sang to that night, I mean, they had me do two songs. It was real old songs, and they liked them just as good as they would. And, of course, when I did Rock Atop, the roof flew off then.
I bet,
But I really... kind of hated to leave after I got used to the place, but it was some kind of a thing. I never thought I'd ever get a chance to play.
Play
that, you know. But
well, that just shows you how good you are—that you could blow the roof off of an outdoor festival. That is
that's
amazing,
right there. That's right. Let's take a break. We're going to be back with one more segment. Maybe we'll get to talk a little bit more about Rocky Top. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We're here with Bobby Osborne. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Sitting here all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please let's forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Why should we be apart?
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. Don't be cruel. That. That's Bobby Osborne off of his album Original. And that's, of course, Don't Be Cruel, made famous by one Elvis Presley back in the day.
That's true. That's true. Now, before the break, you were talking a little bit about Rocky Top driving him nuts at Bonnaroo. That was first released as a B-side on a 45, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
On Christmas Day. Is that right?
It's Christmas Day of 1966.
Which is a great day to release an album.
Well, yeah, shopping's done at that point.
I didn't hardly believe it on such a special day it is. I couldn't believe it that Decca Records would release a song. So I wrote them a letter asking would they send me a printout of the release dates. the dates of each release, each song.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got back, I looked, the sure thing, December the 25th, 1967, Rocket Top was released on that day.
Wow.
So, I don't know. I told my brother, I said, it's two days after Christmas, that's the best present we ever got. So,
did you have any idea that it was a special song? And at what point did you say, okay, this is actually, this is bigger than normal?
Well, the Wilburn Brothers had recorded a song called Roll Muddy River.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did it kind of slow tempo. And so they wanted us to do the song. So we speeded it up and put it to the bluegrass way of doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out real good. So we were going to do a session of records the following day. And my brother went over to Bulo and Felicia's house to, and we had recorded a lot of their songs, you know, previous to that. So went and asked Bulo, did they have any, did he have a song that we could include? Back those days, you did, you tried to do three songs for a session in 3 hours. So we already had two. We needed one more. So he pulled out Rocket Top and started singing it. So Sonny just, it was just sounded like a regular bluegrass song to Sonny. So, and he called me up and he said, you should come over. And I live right across a little ways from Bulo. So he said, you need to come over and listen to this song. He said, we make a do it. So I go over there and listen to it. And of course, he's only had it halfway finished at that time.
Oh, wow.
And so I got the thing, and the idea of Roll Muddy River, how we changed it, we could do, and Bulo was singing Rocket Top at slow speed.
Really?
Slow, like the same way. And I got that idea. I told him, I said, we could speed that up, sing it slow and speed it up. And I said, it would make a good one. So, of course, the Wilburn Brothers, they had Surefire Music Publishing going at that time, so they wanted us to do, and we were signed with them, they wanted us to do Surefire songs. So we waited till the last one to pull that one out, you know. Because Teddy, he was in the control room. We pulled out Rocket Top, and all them guys started, boy, he come out, and he said, what is it? What's this here, you know? And I told him, it's a song we'd like to do. And he said, "Who did we publish it?" I said, no. I said, Bryant Publishing Company published it. And he says, well, we'd like for you to do the Surefire songs. And I said, well, this we'd like to do this one. And he says, well, he studied there for a couple of minutes. He said, well, they're good friends of ours and good people. He says, go ahead and do that one then. So we worked it
wow.
out, and we did it. And it laid dominant for 6 months before we ever come out. And I'd forgotten the lyrics to it. I just thought, well, it's one of them songs
you gotta sing it once, right?
Anymore anyway, you know. So finally, they just Decca Records started to put it out, and in about just a very few days, it had reached about the 70,000 mark of sales at that time.
Wow!
And so Decca Records, and they saw right then that they had a nice record for, especially bluegrass. You know,
right.
I mean, Sony was we'd hadn't been at the Opry but 3 years, you know, and so we was surprised like everybody else, I guess, but. Anyway, it just kept me. So we went up on Ralph Emery's show, that what you're talking about there. Went up his show for, and my favorite memory was a ballad. In those days there, if you could get a ballad in the charts, it would stay longer, you know.
Oh, okay.
So Rocket Top was on the other side of it. Well, Ralph says, well, he says, I've been playing the A side this, and we was there just talking with Ralph, you know. And he says, I'm gonna play the B side and see what everybody thinks about it. So he turned the thing over and played Rocket Top, and
boom,
his switchboard started lighting up, and so that was all of my favorite memory there, the other side of Rocket Top. And we seen right then that was gonna be a good song. So I had to go back and relearn it again. I knew two verses of it, and we'd sung them two verses for a while, but. People got saying, no, we won't hear the other two verses too.
Oh, wow.
I had to learn the whole thing again. But it just kept building and building. And even today, there's this, we don't go anywhere. And there's no point in me going down to opera if it don't sing Rocket Top.
Right.
And you know how they holler at the football game, Rocket Top, hey!
Mm-hmm.
They do that. You know them people. They've been to a football game.
Oh, yeah. When they start doing that at the opera, yeah.
Bobby, this has been such a pleasure, such an honor to have you here. Thank you very much. Will you come back and visit with us again?
I'd be glad to. Yes, sir. Okay. I sure will.
Very good. We'd love to have it.
I thank you very much for getting to having me on your show tonight.
The website is bobbyosborne.com. The new album is called Original.
Pick it up.
Go get it. Go check it out. And check out the video for Gotta Get a Message to You, because that's really good, too. So we got another great hour of the show coming up. We got hit songwriter Chris Wallen coming in, and we're going to be talking about boats and stuff. It's going to be pretty cool. So come on back to the Music Row Show.